Morning, folks. This is Scott, your host at Sharing the Burden. We're live at 102.9 FM, whistlefm.com, formerly Whistle Radio. Sharing the Burden believes in life recovery. We are a life recovery group, and we follow the 12 steps of sharing the burden to support the hurting. All are welcome at our meetings. We hold weekly meetings in several locations. Check out sharingtheburden.ca to find the meeting closest to you, or start your own. And we need one in Stouffville soon. So, Jessica, you heard that little intro, and obviously we're looking for a meeting in Stouffville. And by the way, Jessica Santonato is my guest this morning. Really thrilled to have you here, Jessica.
Thank you for having me, Scott.
Yeah, it's quite something to have someone who's done a TED Talk and who's an award-winning author. That's unusual for us. Tell us just quickly a little bit about the books you've written so that people know and they can put in perspective who you are.
Sure, thank you. So the first one that I did was that I wrote it at a time that I was a raw food chef and personal trainer. So it was a book specifically for women. So it was called High-Powered Food and Fitness for the Busy Professional Woman. And then the second one was an anthology. So there was about 20 of us authors in a book, and I got to share, each person got to share a chapter, and I got to share part of my story of what I went through, and I'm sure we'll get into that later today. And then the third one, which I'm working on right now, is the memoir, and that is called Joy Is Your Only Job, and that's my experience of being involved with gangs and going through that whole life involved in the criminal lifestyle and having my husband attack me and then overcoming.
Very interesting, too. And one of the first questions I asked Jessica, because I knew a little bit about her story and listened to her TED Talk and so on, was, you know, so you're interested in what goes on inside these jails, especially as it relates to men and how, you know, the gift of forgiveness may be a way to start with a lot of these guys. And I believe that's right, by the way. But the first thing I thought of was, well, with her history, has she spent time inside herself? And you know, it's a difficult question to ask people. Because many who have don't want to talk about it, even though Scott comes along and says, well, if you don't share your experiences, how are you going to help anyone else? So anyway, Jessica has seemingly been able to live that life and not have to do time anywhere along the line. So that's a wonderful.
Thank goodness.
You know, whether that's, are you just very intelligent or is that?
Got lucky.
Got lucky.
I mean, I could have easily ended up in prison, right, based on the things that I was involved with. Yeah. And, you know, thank goodness things worked out for me a certain way, as they always do for everyone. And for me, I got involved with a lot of things before the age of 18. So the police looked at me as a minor and tried to, you know, prevent me from getting into the system at that age. But if I was older, for sure. Yeah.
Because that brings up a good point. When you look back in your life, and as you say, like before 18 and probably much younger, is there determining factors in the way you lived, the way you were brought up, like things specifically that relate, you know, in a pointed way to how you ended up with gangs and so on?
So I think what's funny about my story is usually people that, you know, in my experience, the people that I know that are in prison, have been to prison, that are involved with a life of crime, have grown up in some kind of adversity, you know, childhood, you know, traumas, poverty, a number of reasons. And what's interesting with my story is I never had that. I grew up in a very good home. I have two parents that were married, no substance abuse, no financial issues, nothing. I had a very, very good childhood. So what compels a young girl to want to turn to gangs? And for me, I grew up very shy, and I was practically mute, like beyond shy. And I'll speak to friends right now who knew me back in the day, and they said, Jess, like, who are you right now? Because I couldn't even get a word out of you. And the second time I'd ask you, what did you say? You would say it even quieter. It was so hard to get you to speak. So for me, I was bullied as a child, and, you know, I grew up in Edmonton, you know, the '80s, it wasn't as diverse. So I was called a variety of names. I'm, you know, Chinese background, but born in Edmonton. So being bullied and being called the shy girl, quiet, Jessica doesn't talk, she's just a crybaby. I thought, you know what? My life is boring. My parents, they're too strict, even though in hindsight, they really weren't strict. And I longed for more excitement. And at 15, you know, I started to talk to certain people that were involved with gangs, and one thing led to another, you know, and by the time I got to grade 10, the first semester of grade 10, so Edmonton, there was very infamous stabbing at West Edmonton Mall there that year. The guy that ended up doing the stabbing, he was in house arrest. So this was the first guy I met. This was my first boyfriend. So that was, so my experience was, I was basically thrown into everything right away, starting at 15.
Starting at 15, wow. And a hardcore partner to begin your trip. So you had a good trainer, so that got you off to a off to a start. And when did you find the ability, or what happened that you were able to overcome this shyness? And I ask these questions purposefully because those are the things that are important to someone who's where you were then, you know.
I think since being involved with the gangs, you know, I liked how the tables had turned. So when I went to school, my friends, their parents would warn, you know, my friends, stay away from Jessica. Mm-hmm. And then other kids started to realize that I was, you know, hanging out with the wrong group, and they became fearful of me and the guys that would come over to the school grounds. So it started to turn there. And, you know, inside I liked that as a child, going, okay, like, look who's laughing now. And I think as well, you know, getting older and everything that I went through, and now sharing my story more and more. And again, we'll get into the details, but there was a big turning point for me in 2010. So almost 10 years later, here I am slowly, you know, I've been sharing more and more, writing more, been on the TEDx stages, been on various interviews. So sharing has allowed me to just express myself. And you pointed to something earlier when we started the show. It's so important to share our stories, because if we don't, we're doing a disservice to people, and you never know who needs to hear your message.
No, that's it's so perfectly true. And matter of fact, last night, one of the fellows who I spent time with in the jail that I go to, the men's jail, he spoke of being in that boat, you know, where you know, nobody cares, nobody loves me. He doesn't say that in so many words, you know, because he's a big, tough, macho guy, you know, and but his heart is just crying out for some help. And you look back in his life and the abuse he lived in his own family, opposite of you, you know, created who he is and what he is and how he operates. So I don't know, there's always triggers, and even in the best life there's something, you know. I think you gained a sense of power, you know, when you got into the wrong end of things, because you're able to be who you are, and, you know, your leadership abilities shine as much in there as they do on the good side of the street. Yeah. Matter of fact, probably more honor on this side of the street than there is on that. You know, I trust the guys in jail a lot more than I trust the people outside of jail. Mm. That may sound corny, but I know they're real. When we sit down and talk, that what they tell me is the real deal.
Yeah.
What someone out here tells me is what's the real deal that'll benefit them.
Mm.
You know, so it's a little different.
But yeah, that's so true.
You know, yeah.
You know where you stand with the guys.
Well, you do. You do. And the same with the ladies in the other side. You know, it's a whole different dynamic, but it's the same thing. You know, hurting people. Ladies express a lot easier.
Yeah.
The men keep that hidden inside, and, you know, and that, you know, as you come to spend time in those institutions, I think you'll quickly agree that, you know, to draw on their ability to express is probably everything.
Yeah.
You know, whether that means in some cases being totally quiet, in other cases gently offering the floor once in a while, maybe telling people inside that you will not be interrupted while you're speaking. You are on the throne. It's yours.
Yes.
You know, and there won't be any comments. There's not going to be anybody saying you should have this, you should do that. You know, you get enough of that. I mean, you live your life that way in here. And when you get out, the ones who tell you that cause you to, you know, do things you don't want to do. So.
Yeah. And I also believe that this is a time not just for guys in jail, but just men in general all over the world. Like, we have this women's empowerment, which I support, but also as a woman I always say we can't leave men behind. Mm-hmm. And there's all this emasculation that's going on that's unnecessary. Yeah. And it really angers me when I hear women speaking that way and putting men down and blaming them and bashing them unnecessarily. Yeah. So I think it's really important for men to have a safe platform to be able to express themselves.
Yeah. And telling your story is everything, as you said earlier. And when we're in there, the one guy who tweaked me to this thought that showed me the gash in his back and so on, that fellow, you know, he's done 25, 30 years already of his life, and he's probably 50, you know, sort of.
Right.
So anyway, he's thinking about coming out now. As he gets out, you know, where's he going to do it? What's he going to do? And I said, you know what? We'll say his name was Carlos. I said, you know what, Carlos? Your story, what you've overcome, and now the big, big pieces that you have to overcome, the mental illnesses, you know, the addictions, you know, you have to overcome them, because your story of how you're going to do that and how you did it once you've done it is enough to change the world and that you live in, you know, and you have to survive. You have to make this. And that simple kind of talk
right.
gets a guy like that motivated to stay alive, maybe not to push his luck on the inside so that he can, you know, take control in there anymore. And maybe he has to relinquish the control on the bad side, trust in something, God, if he believes in God, and move on with his life. So it's,
yeah.
The dynamic is beautiful, but telling your story, folks out there,
yeah.
tell your story. You see a quiet person over in the corner, don't worry about who she, he is or what they think. Go over and tell them something about you, how you hurt, how you've overcome it. You'll be surprised.
Yes, and everyone has a story.
Absolutely.
Every single person, you know. And that's the thing, when I share my story around, people say, oh, I'm too embarrassed to share my story. It's not as intense or severe. And you can't compare, and everyone is on their own journey. You know, we come here as a soul to learn our lessons, and we can't compare someone's 25% to someone's 90%. We just never know where someone's at.
No. And I mean, you know, a bruised finger is horrible for one person, and it's a joke for another.
Exactly.
It's like feelings. We all use feelings to determine how we should talk, you know.
Yep.
I think we shouldn't do it, but that's what we do. When people learn that really their feelings are only the summation of who they are, as opposed to what the severity of the instances going on is.
Yep.
So the reality is, how you feel about it has very little to do with the thing itself. So
right.
if you're going to base decisions, criteria, and motivating factors, life-giving opportunities on your feelings, I'm sorry.
That doesn't work.
You know, and with that bit of wisdom, Jessica, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to get our friend Jason over there to probably go pay some bills. That's usually what he tells me.
Yeah, morning, Scott. And yeah, I think it's time to pay some bills. We'll be back here on Sharing the Burden on Whistle FM.